time to get freaky with some Radio Freak America.
Holy cow!
Hi, this is Hughes, and welcome to
Radio Freak America!
Radio Freak America!
Radio Freak America!
Radio Freak America!
Remember, hacking is more than just fun. Thanks for your support.
And now to introduce your host,
Drew Parallels,
with regular appearances by
Hank Dog
and
you.
Hey, I don't believe that any system is totally secure.
Fred, the server was full, so I deleted all the files.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
How about I give you the finger?
With AT&T.
Have very careful consideration, sir. I've come to the conclusion that your system sucks.
It's the year 2000, but where are the flying cars? I was promised flying cars. I don't see any flying cars. Why? Why? Why?
When will this insanity end?
My advice to you, start drinking heavily.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Technology, privacy, freedom.
Okay, get in the mail. All right, let's see what we got today. Tell you what, getting the mail sure is a lot more fun now that I'm doing some postal hacking. Okay, what do we got here? We got... speaking of postal hacking, something I sent myself. I'll have to read this later, okay. Look at this. Something from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Great. I'll have to read that on the show. What else we got here? Junk mail and more junk mail. That's big. That's pretty heavy. What is that? Hey, it's from Bland. Whoa, let's see what it is. Holy shit! Yeah! Would you like to play a game? I love that. That, by the way, was given to us by Logan5, new on the show. Logan, how you doing?
How's it going?
It's going very well. I'm recording with you and, unbelievably, Meme. Meme?
Actually, this is Elizabeth Smite.
Oh, they found you! This is a Radio Freak America exclusive. The girl who was found in Utah. How are you? You were wearing a wig walking around with a drifter. I think that you wanted to be with him. That you were some repressed Mormon girl, and you were getting some, so you started to go off, and they quote, found you. Thank God they found you.
Yeah.
I think that's a bunch of bullshit. How you doing, Meme?
Well, I'm doing pretty good, but I was getting a big kick out of them finding that girl because the supposed report of them locating her was she was seen walking underneath a billboard that showed her picture, and I'm like, Now, wait a minute. On one hand, they're saying she's wearing a black wig or that she's dressed up in a veil, you know. But then someone recognized her from the billboard as she walked by it.
Yeah, kind of odd.
Yeah, big time perceptual management.
I watch the news pretty regular almost every day for, you know, through the day. I didn't hear anything about this girl until they said they found her tonight.
Yeah.
It was all over the news. Like, well, how come I didn't hear about it?
I've vaguely heard. Well, first of all, whew, that's got to be rough watching all that news, man. I cannot take it. A little bit is too much for me.
I use the freedom, though. You know,
I use the term news very loosely.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, that's probably what it was, 5 months of freedom for her. I heard about it briefly in the past. It's all just so weird. It's all so surreal. You know, it's almost like it's scripted or something. I don't know. Let's move on. I've got some housekeeping. Again, I'm joined by Meme and Logan Five, two very talented, very special artists. You can see a lot of their art, quality art, on oldschoolfreak.com, the Hacker Art Gallery, by the way. I've got some housekeeping. Before we get into the special topic, which will be art and technology this fine evening, I want to do some housekeeping, some quick stuff. You heard the intro. Yes, look at it. Listen to this. It's going to be rough. Oh, my God. I got 1,000 pages of Freak Heaven, baby. That's right. Bland Inquisitor Leet Haxor sent me this book. He said he got it dirt cheap. I don't know, like, you know, $5, something like that. And hopefully he got two, because I would hate to take this from anybody. It is so good. It's just, I'm so happy. Thank you so much, Bland. I'll do whatever I can to return the favor. It just, it means a lot. Books, you know, to me, I'm going to get a little mushy right now. To me, books are kind of special. Yes. Yes, they are. I mean, a good book, good information, you know, it teaches you something. Somebody took the time to write all of this stuff. You know, a couple of guys, Regis J. Bud Bates and Donald W. Gregory. You know, thank you guys, and thank you, Bland, for this book. Books mean a lot to me.
Books rule.
Yeah, they do. They really do. That's like one of my, you know, that's one of my weaknesses. Books, big time. Oh, man, look at that book. It's dirt cheap at the used bookstore, you know. Speaking of book, well, I'll get that later. So, thank you, Bland. Next, as you heard on the intro, got a letter. That's right. And the letter is from, and I got a bumper sticker, Coding is Not a Crime.
Yes, ma'am.
EFF.org. Hell yeah. This letter is from the EFF. I'm going to go ahead and read it. It's worth the read. And I have... Here it is. Okay. Dear Dual and RFA, on behalf of the board and staff of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, I would like to thank you for your generous donation in the amount of $100, which we received on 11/25/2002, November 25th, 2002. EFF is fighting to make sure that our basic rights to free speech, privacy, and free and open communications are maintained and enhanced in the digital age. And it is through the financial commitment of individuals like you that we are able to fund this important work. For your records, EFF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and our federal tax ID is blah, blah, blah. Your donation is fully tax deductible. Oh, well, I've already done my taxes, everybody, so I'm not taking that deduction, by the way. I wouldn't do that regardless. Your contribution will be used to support some of our current work, including... I love this. Our work to safeguard free speech and fair use rights from harmful expansions of the law. EFF is representing 5 Replay TV customers in a suit against the major studios to assert the historically recognized fair use rights to time shift programming, skip commercials, and make copies of programming for personal use. EFF helped overturn the Children's Internet Protection Act, a law that forced the use of screening software in public library terminals. Software that is inherently flawed, likely to block valuable speech, and that limits librarians' ability to determine library internet policies. Our opposition to industry and government mandates of standards that bridle technology and innovation. EFF is an active participant in industry groups like the Copy Protection Technical Working Group, which is trying to limit your use of over-the-air digital television transmissions. We've also mounted opposition to Congress's attempt to mandate copy protection schemes through legislation like the, oh my God, I hate this acronym, Consumer Broadband and Digital Television Promotion Act.
What a bunch of crap. EFF would like to recognize all of those affiliated with Radio Freak America who gave their support. C4, Dual, Condor, Lavarius, Lit, Lawn, Luscious, M from S, Meme, hell yeah, Meme, Mary Chan, Pack, Rax, Stank Dog, Turmoil, Wintermute, WS Ninja, CSR, and Zapperlink. Your contributions support our efforts to defend cyber liberties in the digital age. Once again, thank you for your gift. It means a great deal to us. Sincerely, Kevin McLaughlin, Membership Coordinator, EFF. Isn't that awesome?
I'm actually wiping a tear duct.
thank you. It was. It was very touching. I'm going to try to scan this.
That would be great. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I'm planning to scan this. I'll do it somehow.
The number of people that have probably provided them funding, and I was so jaded, I didn't think they'd notice, and then here it is, they wrote us something that's so commendable.
Yeah, well, we had some people help us out, and we discussed that on last week's show, I believe, and, owe a lot to them, Occupant and M from S, actually. They both went to listen to Cindy Cohen speak, I hope that's her name, and they hooked us up, basically. They said, hey, you know, did you ever see that? And they actually remembered, and they, straight up, it's my fault. I didn't give the right return address or a bad address. I don't know. But they came through. And you know what? This is, it's very simple, but it's very, you know, I appreciate this, you know? And not for me, but for this whole list right here, C4, Dual, Connor, Lewis, Lid, Lon, Lush, everybody that contributed.
You name names, and the thing is consider how many people just get a computer-generated form letter. You know, like if you send somebody to Amnesty International or whatever, you get a form letter.
Yeah.
Somebody actually took the time to sit down and write that, and that's awesome. That's so awesome.
It is. So I'm very appreciative. Thank you, EFF, for sending that. For you know what? Thank everybody that donated. I think you did again an important selfless act, and you should be commended. And you were.
Volumes for economies of scale, because a lot of people think, well, I can't be a significant contributor. You know, if I'm only picking up, you know, like $1 or $10. But if you multiply that times the number of other parties with the same means, then suddenly it becomes a significant financial infusion.
Yeah, and don't think $100 is not significant. They appreciate it.
That's 1 hour of a lawyer's time.
Yeah, no shit. Okay, so there's that. Let's see, housekeeping. Ah, I got another good email. Been getting lots of great stuff. Thank you, everybody. I can't get to all of them on every show, so bear with me, but keep it coming. This is actually to me. Duel, I just wanted to say thank you for creating hosting Radio Freak America. I really enjoy listening to you and your guests, and like the fact that you focus on telephones when possible. Like others have said, you cover a broad range of topics which involve telecommunications and the like, and it is refreshing. I just wanted to say that I really liked the book review you had a few weeks back about a phone of our own, and would really enjoy hearing about more books which cover telecom subjects. A Phone of Our Own sounded so interesting, I went to Amazon and picked up a copy. It is a very interesting story. I'll end here and just say thanks one more time, Ryan. Thank you very much, Ryan. Ryan, you've got a great idea, and I've wanted to do this, and Ryan, you've inspired me, you've inspired RFA. We're going to do that. I'm going to, and I won't be able to read. Sometimes it might just be a list, but I'm going to try to give book reviews, freak book reviews if I can. Of course, I can't do it every week, but I will read as much as I can, and maybe even I'll start reading into a book and give you the review then. Because I know there's some that I know I wouldn't read. I've got a bunch of books. There's lots of other books. I'll get input from other people. And guess what? We will review books, hopefully freak books, as much as we can. So thank you, Ryan, for the email and the great idea. You will be hearing more book reviews.
And I'll also pledge, anytime I'm on the show, I'll try to follow up with some sort of bibliographic or web link resource so that people can, if they want to find out more, can have some, filtered research sources as well.
That would be great. You know, your Culture Jamming Resources article is just phenomenal. It's up on the site. You can check that out if you want to get into culture jamming. You know, I would do a weekly spot meme if you want to say, hey, have everybody check this out and write a little review. I would do that every week for you, for Ryan, for everybody, for everybody that enjoys RFA.
Yeah, I would be glad to do that, particularly in light of the fact that I have to watch so much crap to find out anything of use. You know, I'd be glad to save anyone some trouble because I know that I end up filtering more media than I actually absorb, because there's just so much noise out there. Anybody can do a query and get back thousands of results. It's finding those gems, you know,
that are
in the, you know, it's like the needle in the haystack.
Yeah, it's, you really gotta, you know, and half the fun really is trying to find those things, you know, but if you want to get down and dirty, you want to do it quick, you know, stuff like this is going to help you. Now, you know, next is going to be freak news, and hold, I don't have my quarter. All right, hold on.
More bad radio.
Oh, I think I just bumped the phone, too. I'm busting out the freak, my freak toolkit. I'm trying to find my, got it.
At tones?
I got a bunch of things in here. I got my, of course, got the FRS, so I'll turn it off. Okay. But since I don't have tones, the quarter tones, I've got the trusty tone dialer, so. And it's dead! Oh, son of a, screw it. Okay, it's freak news, quick freak news. Good freak news, I would think, and wow. I had to, you know, look twice. I didn't know if this was true or not. I actually saw it on Slashdot, and then I followed the link to CBSNews.com. Yes, thank you. President, the do not call list is law. Did you guys hear about this?
No.
President Bush on Tuesday signed legislation creating a national do not call list intended to help consumers block unwanted telemarketing calls. We've talked about this in the past, and apparently it passed the House. President Bush signed it. The bill allows the Federal Trade Commission to collect fees from telemarketers to fund the registry, which will cost about $16 million in its first year. I'm sure it'll cost less afterwards. The Do Not Call program should begin operation by summer.
You know what? I think I know the impetus for that, Duel. I read a press release the other day that they had a hotline placed in the Oval Office that was related to Homeland Security, and the first time it rang, guess what it was?
No way.
Telemarketer.
Holy moly.
Well, that would be classic. I'm not kidding you. I heard that. It was like on one of the wire services.
Yeah, well, that may explain this. I guess the president doesn't like crappy phone calls in the middle of his steak and beer like everybody else. It goes on and says, consumer groups and many lawmakers say the registry has overwhelming support from a public that is fed up with unwanted telemarketing calls, and apparently so is the president.
Hey,
as Meme just informed us, and Meme, consumers, yes, because Meme is not a consumer, consumers could enroll in the free service via the internet or a toll-free number. Ooh, I cannot wait to use either of those. Telemarketers would have to check the list every 3 months to find out who does not want to be called. Those who call listed people could be fined up to $11,000 for each violation. Charity surveys and calls on behalf of politicians would be exempt. I think you're going to find... Yeah.
Oh, you know what, though? When you consider that the son of a very well-known... you know, member of the presidential cabinet is in charge of communications. I really have to wonder where their priorities are in light of what they've been doing with various communications issues such as file sharing and all, when the real scourge is spam and telemarketer calls.
Yes.
And since any idiot with a computer and, you know, and no creativity can war dial every goddamn number in the United States until it gets fax machine, and they don't care. They don't care that the person doesn't have a fax machine. The onus is on you. Think about it. To have the fax machine, to get the number, to call the place, to tell them to take you off the list.
Right.
What's wrong with that picture? And if you've got three lines like we do, and only one of those is a dedicated fax line, it really burns my butt that I have to use my toner and my paper print out the stupid ass thing so I can get the damn number.
Yep. Yeah, it's a bunch of crap. Hopefully this will help.
It always happens either during your dinner or before you hit the snooze button.
Yeah. If anybody's ever up late at night during their hacking sessions, you know that's when the spam arrives. You know that's when the faxes come. Right? They're coming in the middle of the night. And that's when they're sending all that crap. Let's hope. This begins to put a kibosh on all this crap.
I think, though, if you get one of those junk faxes, obviously you can call them up, and they're not very enthusiastic about putting you on their list. They usually have a 30-day processing period. But I was thinking a good way to really teach them a lesson is to flood their lines by simply printing out a flyer that would have their 1-800 number and say free phone service or free long distance for new cell phone users, and give that number. take them to the worst part of town, put them in laundromats and bathrooms where the toilets don't flush.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe they'll understand what the meaning of inconvenience is.
Yeah, there's lots of ways to make their life heck, and you know what? They should. They should be taught a little lesson. First of all, if you ever get a junk fax and it says, you know, if you want your number removed from our list, verify it and send it back, don't. All that does is verify that that's a good number. Second, there's lots of other things. I would see, you know what kind of gets me, and it's not really harassment, but it's just a scam. And, you know, I feel sorry for the people that fall for it. You go to payphones. I like payphones. I go to payphones a lot. And, you know, people slap these little, like, sticky things with little envelopes and then little, you know, slices of paper with a number on it. And it's a make $1 billion in a minute, you know, lose 300 pounds in a day, whatever. And it's got an 800 number, and it's usually a crappy message. And then you get, you know, sort of like voicemail. I would sit there at the payphone and I would call that voicemail 100 times and just berate them or do a bunch of crap and leave them tons and tons of crappy voicemail. That's what I did. Kind of like the same thing, you know.
It is the good old fax loop. And the way you do this is obviously there's an imprint of the number. What you can do is just take a fax machine, someone else's fax machine preferably, like at a service bureau, get your piece of paper, put your original in there, tape it into a loop, and then send it, and basically deplete their paper.
Yeah, it'll just keep going and going. Whoa, we got some Voxer. Did you say something, Logan?
I said, you got a fax virus? And I had a person on the inside, and it was so funny. They said the person literally freaked out, unplugged the fax machine, was too stupid to know that somebody just put a original in there and faxed it over and over again, and the people were afraid of even hitting the fax machine back up.
That is so funny. Can I take this opportunity to tell a little story? I was at a gas pump, and you know, I almost feel sorry for this lady. She was having trouble using her card with the gas pump, you know, the automated system. I feel sorry for her. She was having trouble. She asked me for help, and sure, I'd help her. And she wasn't, you know, she wasn't 100 years old or anything, you know. But she was trying it herself while I'm standing there, and I'm saying, lady, let me help you. Wait a minute. Hold on. And she's putting her card in the wrong way, and she's pressing, they have, like, the stickers that look like little cards, and she thought they were buttons, and she's pressing the stickers on the pump. And, you know, are we gifted? Are we special? You know? Why do we enjoy technology so much when to other people it's so foreign, it's so alien? I don't know. It was a little amusing and a little scary. I felt a little sorry for it as well, but just a little story there. So, yeah, there's the do not call list. Good stuff, I think.
Well, she does not discriminate. I think that's the most resonant, you know, aspect.
Who's that?
Is that, you know, like when I first heard the hacker piece, you know, or the guy who's talking about the computer, you know, if you make a mistake and you screw up, it's you, not the computer.
Right.
And that's the thing is, I've always liked technology because technology, as long as you deal with it on its terms, logic, which is far better than you can expect from a human being,
right,
it's far more rewarding.
It is. It is very much so. I was actually going to rant about logic, but I'm in a better mood now. I was actually really pissed off before the show started. I'm not going to do that.
You have like a bureaucratic experience or something?
All right, fine, I will. I was in a bad mood before the show. Here's what happened. I like to skate, right? I go skate, it's a blast. I go to, there's a big, you know, strip mall like you see in America, all these viral-like strip malls everywhere. And this one, it's not totally full. Big parking lot behind it, totally smooth, really nice, slick curbs. Nobody's there, no stores, nothing, no, just me. Me and my skateboard, that's it. Right? And I'm having a blast. The old man comes up in his little golf cart, you know, with the zip-up plastic bag cover, and says, you can't skate here, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and I know why they don't want me to skate there, because I'm, quote, a liability. A liability. If I fall and get a boo-boo, I'm going to sue them. What the fuck are they fucking talking about? If I fall, there's nobody around. Nobody. Just me. There's a liquor store there. They got drunks zipping through on bicycles and cars going to get their booze, right? And I'm riding on my skateboard. They're zipping through this parking lot at 40 miles an hour. If they hit somebody, somebody will die, right? They will be killed. Does this old man not know that there are freaking you know, cars and bicycles and so many other things going on that'll kill people, right? And I'm just riding my freaking skateboard where nobody's around. Nobody. Nothing. Me and asphalt. That's it. That pisses me off. He just, I don't know if he has it out for me or, just, oh, there's, can't you see there's signs all over? And yeah, I am making fun of him still because he's motherfucking old, all right? He's not securing nothing. He's that motherfucker. Come chase me, motherfucker, and just fucking skate around. Ooh, come get me, right? What the fuck? Security, my ass. Secure. You know what they have fucking security guards doing? Pushing fucking carts. That's not a security guard. That's a clerk, all right?
He's testing you because you can do what he can't do. He can't get laid. His bones and joints hurt, and he hates you for doing what he wishes.
I guess, and I know I'm going to be old someday, and I'm sorry. I just that
when you get old, don't hate people for doing what you can't do. And
I think
half the rules we have are people who are like, oh my god, I might want to get high if it's legal, or oh my god, I might want to have sex if we don't persecute it. So these people make these rules because either they despise something that they ain't supposed to do, or something they can't do.
You think so? I hope I'm not being discriminatory. But I've had other people. I've had police officers. I'd be skating a spot, and the police officer says, "Hey man, you guys can't skate here. You know it's there's another spot." And he actually took us to another spot that it was cool to skate. And I was like, "Right on." He was really cool. And you know, I would have been much more. I wouldn't have got so hot. I wouldn't have been in such a shitty mood, you know, if the guy just would have said, hey, man, you know, I hate to say it, but the management here says you can't skate, you know, you're going to have to move along, you know. And I would have said, all right, man, that's cool, because, you know, I can respect people like that. But he'd go, oh, can't you see there's signs all over the place? No, I can't see this motherfucking signs. God damn it, man. So I got in a better mood. I went to another spot.
They forgot what it was like to be young. I mean, we may not know what it was like to be him.
Yeah.
But see, that's the thing that gets me is, you know, a lot of people will blame young people for things, not realizing that, A, the young person hasn't had their fun yet, okay? And the old person, they've already had their fun, they've had theirs, but for some reason, like, why are all these grown-up hippies voting Republican and telling kids they can't do all the shit they did?
Yeah, no doubt.
I never could figure that out until recently, and someone told me, they said, you know, when you get to a certain point in life and you're not happy, you despise people who have or who can do what you can't have or do yourself.
Very true. Very true. I have found that to be fact.
Yeah, because I've always wondered, why are people trying to stop other people? In other words, if it's not my cup of tea, live and let live.
Yeah, yeah. If I don't have that, you know, big nice car, why should I go slash the tires and break out the window? It doesn't make sense to me. All right. Before I go on any more rants, plus we need to get to the topic. We got two talented artists here. The other thing I was going to rant about, which is totally, utterly freaking illogical, is airport security. We've talked about it ad nauseum. Well, guess what? The worst thing happened. I got my freak, I just grabbed it. Where'd it go? My freak toolkit right here. Right? I got a backpack. I keep it all times. I keep it hanging up. It's got everything. My FRS, all the stuff in the freak toolkit. Go back to the back episodes, and you'll know what's in it. I unpacked that and I use that for my trip, for my flight. I forgot to take out my tamper wrenches. Now, you know, the Allen wrenches with the little the hole in the center, right? So that oddly fit some bolts that you'll see. And I forgot to take them out. And they found them. They saw them in the X-ray, and they said, "Well, could you show me where the Allen wrenches are?" I say, "Well, sure, of course I can. You know, they're tiny little Allen wrenches, right? They're, you know, 3 inches, maybe. You know." I says, "Yeah, they're right there." "Oh yeah, geez, I forgot them. There they are, right?" "Well, we're gonna have to take that." And I said, "What? It's not a knife. It's not a screwdriver.
Goddamn key."
Yeah.
Sizes a weapon more than that.
Exactly. I had so many people tell me that I could fuck you up with my key way worse. It's way sharper than an Allen wrench. Here's their, quote, logic. Here's their frickin' logic. If we let you take these on, we'll have to let other people take any tools they want. What the fuck is that? Well, that, okay, with that logic, natural progression, natural extension, if you let these Allen wrenches on, you'll let a gun on. That does not make any sense whatsoever. No! You can let me have the Allen wrenches and not let the guy take the big sharp screwdriver on. There's no logic in that whatsoever.
Well, I can't blow up the plane, so maybe I'll unbolt it from the inside.
Yeah. I can't. Oh, I've got one seat off. Hold on.
Actual management. I mean, in other words, you're thinking it through and you recognize, wait a minute, you know, what's the difference here? I mean, let's face it. It doesn't pass the giggle test that a bunch of guys who can't even fly a Cessna could hijack wide-bodied aircraft with goddamn box cutters.
Right.
I mean, the stewardess could have taken a pot of hot coffee and thrown it on those guys.
Yes.
You could take a cushion, a flotation cushion that's from your seat, use it as a shield, and charge the guys. This is not about reality. This is about perception of reality. In other words, they tell the sheeple that all's well because we're taking away pocket knives and fingernail clippers because we can't ensure your safety.
They yeah.
ensure your safety, but they give you the illusion of it.
That is so true.
If you shine a light on the stupidity of the rule, you open up a big can of worms, and that can of worms is they cannot ensure your safety.
Not in the least. You think you're still safe, Lion? Guess what? If somebody wants to do something bad to you, they will do it. There's nothing the TSA or anybody who is made a federal employee can do about it.
Well, especially not the people they're hiring.
Yeah, no doubt. Oh, my
God.
That's
the funny thing is, you know, anybody with half a brain can't get a job like that. And then the people that they hire tend to be people from, you know, disadvantaged circumstances. Like, I found out a lot of people were let go recently who were former felons. A lot of them don't speak the English. They're from third world countries where people are accustomed to checkpoints, accustomed to subversion of human rights, and you give them a little bit of power, and what have you got? You got a power trap.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, and how about these TSA guys? And here's just a small example. I like detail. I like attention to detail. You know, granted, I'm wrong a lot. You know, I don't mind. But here, this just, all right, this just straight up bugged me, you know? These guys, right, they're walking, talking, what the, I don't know what the hell they were talking about, some incoherent babble, and they were going to smoke, of course. Gotta smoke, you know? Have to smoke. Well, guess what? They couldn't wait to get out of the goddamn airport to light. That really bugged me. After they took my goddamn Allen wrenches, right? I'm not breaking any laws. I am not doing anything.
But they withdraw.
They just gotta have their cigarette, and they fucking light it up in his pocket. Oh, God, it just made me mad.
It makes me really angry, too, because I think if anybody would ever really put the airport security issue under the manga by which determining what items are kind, which are not, I think it would just disable, because the truth is, it's just window dressing.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, this business about, you know, brain scanners, you know, where they've got technology from NASA stories, you know, where, okay, well, what if you're worried about your divorce or worried about your bills and you're going to show a high stress level? Anyway,
or you're scared to fucking draw a flying, man.
Yeah.
What if you're scared of flying, for God's sake? You know what I'm saying? Okay, stick this sensor under your armpit so we can see if you're a terrorist. Bullshit. Oh, man. I hope this recording can... I've yelled a lot. I haven't yelled this much in a long time. I hope this recording comes out.
It's a good thing.
You think so? Okay. It's a little venting. Boy, talk about initiation, Logan. Sorry, man.
Archibase.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, good. Whew. I didn't expect all of this, to be honest with you. Okay, let's get to the good stuff. The good stuff being art. We have received so much good art. I'm totally flabbergasted. I love it. I soak it in. I observe it. We also, and I'll wait. I'm actually going to put a link on the front page about some other stuff that I already have up, actually. You might not know about it. But again, we've got a lot of art, a lot from Meme and a lot from Logan 5. We all, you know, we've all been talking, and we said, hey, let's get, it's been since episode 8 since we had Slip talk specifically about art. We've had Meme on before, but we talked culture jamming one show and then just other stuff, the other shows, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think the last one I did was, we did the X-Mass special.
Yes, we did, yeah, the X-Mass, but see, we never talked specifically art, you know, you're a speciality, so.
Hitting on art, though, necessarily.
Yeah, yeah, so now we've got two artists together. We're going to talk about technology and art, activism and art. What you, anybody who deals with Old School Freak, who listens to the show, can do to get into art if you want to. We're going to talk about all that stuff. We're going to talk about working for the man. We're going to talk about working on your own. It's going to be great. It's going to be informative. And not to mention, you can now hear, you know, listen to these great artists, right? You've went and you've looked at the pieces. You've taken the time, you know, again, to absorb these pieces of art, to really look at them and really try to feel or get a feeling from them. And now you get to hear the people that created him. I think this is a great opportunity. It's a great opportunity for me, and I definitely appreciate it. I want to thank you both ahead of time. I'm going to start out with the basic questions, right? The standard questions. Actually, might end up really interesting. And believe me, tell as much or as little as you want for everybody else and myself. What's your background? We'll start with me. And what got you into art? You know, what initially drove you to be an artist?
I don't think it's necessarily so much becoming an artist as I think just like there are people who are musicians or who are philosophers or any other thing, it's like a calling. I know myself, I was diagnosed with ADHD at like, you know, age 3, and I was put on Ritalin when I was 4.
Lovely.
And my reaction to Ritalin was basically turning my bedroom into a spaceship where I literally drew potentiometers and dials and gauges and RTs on the wall. And at that point, my parents tried to better channel my aspirations, you know, buying me art supplies and such.
Yeah, instead of their plaster.
Right.
Now, how about you, Logan?
Yeah, I was always kind of a tinkerer, you know, getting into it before I went to school.
I would kind of go along the same lines what Meme said. It's not anything that I really, you know, said, oh, I'm going to grow up and be an artist. I mean, I'm 36. I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do when
I grow
up.
In your nature.
It's exactly.
Yeah, like, are you, so literally, are you, I am an artist. You're an artist because you are. Is that?
It's what I've done. It's what I've always done. It's
wow.
It's me. It's just, I mean, some people, they'll be athletes, they'll be musicians. I do what I do. It's just my thing.
It's just like a guy who's in a band, for instance. He may have his job, and he identifies still as a musician. I think that's how we are. For instance, I didn't go to art school until my second career. I was actually a medical technologist for a long time because I had it beaten into me that, okay, you can't make money, you'll be a starving artist, this and that. So even though I leaned towards the graphic arts, like I interned at a television station and did a lot of photography and stuff in high school, but it wasn't until I tried to work in another field that I hated it so much that I said, fuck it, if I'm going to have to spend most of my time working, I might as well do what I want to do. So I went back and majored in visual communications and got into the field. But I always considered myself an artist even before, you know, I went and got a degree in the field.
That's
almost exact parallel to my situation. I have no formal training. I took a few basic, you know, color theory and a couple of, you know, basic desktop layout, desktop publishing type courses. But my career goals had no inclination of art whatsoever. I mean, back in the late 80s, early 90s, I didn't know that you could get paid to sit in front of a computer.
Yeah, I mean, you're socialized to think what an artist is some, like, starving artist guy selling velvet paintings on the side
exactly.
of the road.
It was never presented as a career option. It was never presented as a viable source for livelihood. So I was in I worked for the railroad for 7 years, very high stress, you know, push a wrong button and I could kill somebody. And I just got sick of living my life, living in a dark room, pushing buttons, and just working shitty hours and shitty, you know, I won't say shitty wages because the pay was really good. That was the one thing that I will say that was good about it. But I just got to a point, like, I can't do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do? Well, I can create. That's what I want to do. And the first gig I found that would let me do that, I took. And, I mean, it was a big change of lifestyle. But I'm telling you, I just don't look back.
To your own self be true.
Exactly. You know,
if you can sell your soul doing something you really hate, and that takes up a majority of your time,
it's so true. And I always thought that was a cliche, but it's so true. I was pulling in almost 50 grand a year at this job, and I said, I can't do it anymore. I'm either going to be dead or I'm going to kill someone. And I made less than half what I was making, but I was so much happier. I was so much happier, and I'm even happier now because I basically get to live my life the way that people should be able to live their lives. You shouldn't have to worry about, well, you know, I shouldn't do this or I shouldn't do that because the man might not like it. Well,
you define your own lifestyle.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly, and it's tough, it's very difficult, but the rewards are so worth it.
Well, I'm jealous. You must find balance, everyone. Okay, now, Logan, now what inspires you? I mean, that's a generic question, but when you're creating, where do you get inspiration? I mean, do you get it from, you know, the crap you see on the news? Do you get it from a dream? Where do you get inspiration? Where do you find it?
It's all around. It's in the world. It's exactly what you see, the crap on television. I get a lot of mine from pop culture. From vintage found images, I get in old magazines, just
taking old advertisements and taking the graphics and just completely rearranging them into something new and interesting. Technology is a big inspiration for me.
Same here.
Just the entire lack of a clean, you know, a better term, the cyber culture, if you want to call it that, the whole man versus machine thing, I guess. It's just my inspiration is just it's everywhere. I can't really define one source for it.
And you mean?
He's pretty much saying the same thing I would have said in the sense that, you know, I think a lot of people look at formalistic art, you know, historically, you know, and they see the cream of the crop, for starters. And they don't always take into consideration that artists are a reflection of the times in as much as they also influence the times we live in. You know, whether they be writers, whether they be musicians or painters, and likewise here, I would say everything is my inspiration. In fact, some of the least inspired art I've ever done was what I consider creative masturbation, you know, where I'm, you know, doing neat stuff and it's pretty and a lot of people would consider it art, but it, to me, it was soulless, and it wasn't until all this 9/11 stuff happened that I really got my kick in the pants in the sense of thinking, you know, I'm mad as hell and I need a way to channel this. And so even though I was making a very good living as an art director working for a big P2P player and getting to have the kind of job that a lot of graphic designers want, and that, you know, I had a product that I believed in and a project I liked and a company I liked and all that, but I was still unfulfilled in the sense that I felt censored, you know, by corporate politics and other people interfering, that being able to do my own work and not being censored and saying, okay, I'm going to do this with reckless abandon. What drives me crazy? What can I do about it? And that's really the basis of my inspiration on a lot of the artwork that you see, you know, in the Hacker Art Gallery, for instance, the infinite copyright symbol called crazy. I thought to myself, now why is it one artist draws a line in the sand and declares intellectual property rights without taking into consideration all the things that inspired them and informed and culminated into the work that they create?
Yeah.
That's a really good point, and that's something that I brought up to people that are very, very protective of you know, copyrights and whatnot. Well, you can't, the way this culture is in our society is, you can't not get your influences from someplace else. And so I definitely agree with that.
Well, we've gotten very hypocritical. I mean, I always thought, why is it that somebody will just have the audacity, and I really mean this, the audacity, to bring a, you know, intellectual property suit against somebody when, now, it'd be different if somebody, like, boosted your artwork and reproduced it verbatim, but put their name on it and profited and said they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be flattery? I mean, not that specific instance, but...
What I'm getting at, though, is if I was in a band and somebody sampled one of my songs, you know, and took one clip or a riff from one of my songs...
And that would be flattering.
Flattered, yeah, because they took something I did and took it to another level, as opposed to just, you know, took my song and put their name on it. It's not
right.
The same thing as plagiarism.
Right.
Right.
And yet, you know, the subject of plagiarism, the subject of fair use, all these things are coming up all over again, but the funny thing is they're citing in such a bankrupt way because they're not realizing that if we get proprietary about intellectual property, there's a finite supply of things out there. I mean, what if
exactly.
Somebody drew a line and said, you can't do nothing that has a mouse in it, or you can't do nothing that has an apple in it, because that's where we're headed right now.
And there's no progress with that.
Yeah.
There's no progress.
It gets
no
worse.
Progress.
Yeah, stagnation, baby.
Yeah, and we're really heading in that direction, because when you have companies like, and I'll say this, they were a client of mine, I did a logo for Applied Biosystems one time, Celera, the company that takes credit for decoding the human genome, they've got more audacity than anybody. They went and decided they were going to patent aspects of the human genome.
Oh, good.
I mean, we're not talking about the process. We're not talking about a piece of technology. We're actually talking about owning the rights to something that's already there.
Right. It's been around for quite a while.
And by the way, they stiffed me for $3,000. I had a $7,000 contract, and they stiffed me for $3,000.
Well, isn't that nice of them?
I mean, a lot of people think only poor clients stiff you. That's
boy.
Not true. The big ones will stiff you. They wanted to own every piece of artwork that I had done up to the point of what they approved, and then I said, no, you only own what you approve. They stopped the project and then used one of the logos they disapproved, and now they're protecting the daylights out of the one they did approve.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Well, we'll actually get to that when we talk about art as a vocation, you know, or design, whatever you want to call it, as a vocation. We'll talk about that, too, the semantics of it. I also, now, and we'll actually just end the standard crappy questions right here. The info's been good, by the way. And that is your views on activism and art. Personally, I think it's a great form of activism. And I think that people that discount... Well, that's actually another subject, but I think people can get messages out, that it is a very effective method to get a message out, and that is through art. I'm assuming you both agree. Actually, your pieces, Meme, are, I think they're activists in a way.
Well, you know, I think part of it also, though, is we're in such a media-infused culture that people are very desensitized. And what I mean by that is when you get so accustomed to so much sensory bombardment, you know, through television, through billboards, banners, and everything else, you shut off. And if somebody, you know, has their work pigeonholed in such a way, you never get to see it. But if you go out there and you try to say, this is what's going on, and I'm going to use this medium to my advantage, because the medium has become the message to some extent, that I'm finding that if I do artwork that looks like what's part of the noise, I can slip my stuff through. For instance, I think people nowadays, they are very dismissive of graffiti. You know, if they see a piece of graffiti, they filter it. But if, on the other hand, you did a poster that was a spoof of a big brand name, someone's going to look at it.
Yeah.
And people aren't going to tear it down thinking it's vandalism because it looks too slick. It looks like part of the built landscape.
You see that a lot in Adbusters, actually.
Yeah, and that's sort of what inspired me was, hey, this is a genre I could be very effective in.
Right, I think if there's definite need for it, too, because there's got to be some sort of balance. The corporate media has such a stranglehold on creativity these days that we really need some sort of balance to that.
And they're trying to define it is the scarier part, though. In other words, people don't realize they're media victims. You know, for instance, what is cool? That euphemism is almost meaningless because cool is manufactured.
Yeah.
You know, people watch TRL and decide, you know, how they're going to wear their hair or what clothes they're going to have. And I go to the malls, and I feel like I'm on a goddamn safari when I go to the mall because I'm seeing these kids buying into manufactured culture. They don't realize how manufactured the youth culture is.
Yeah, even the quote subcultures, like the punks, they're manufactured. Well, I'm totally different because I look like a punk. But guess what? That's manufactured, baby.
I don't know if you guys have Hot Topic stores out where you are, but that's an exact, a prime example of that. You know, they come off as being these hot, cool rebel stores you can go in,
right,
you know, spiked necklaces and Sid Vicious t-shirts. But, you know, how many people there really understand the whole concept? It's a market.
Yeah, they're selling
subculture. The whole thing is, you know, it's like insidious.
Right. It's back. There was a Dead Kennedy song that talks about selling anarchy t-shirts and that. And that's all that personified, and it's really sad.
Well, I mean, let's look at the previous generations. You know, I've always bemoaned the fact that the hippie generation really turned its back, because the same generation that said turn on, tune in, drop out is now, you know, middle class or upper class yuppies, and now they're terrified of their kids, you know, doing any of the things that they would have done. And it's like they're controlling everything.
Yeah, they've been assimilated into the prisons that are suburbia.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's
it's
a good
just quote. Nauseating when I see former icons of cool completely selling out. I mean, it's like, for instance, all of the members of the Dead Kennedys, with the exception of Jello Biafra, have decided to, you know, resurrect the group and make money off of it, despite the fact that Jello, you know, was left out of the equation, and then the artist whose artwork was appropriated for an album reissue, you know, was not compensated or credited.
I see one more Iggy Pop song in a car commercial.
Yeah, it's like becoming so common, and it scares me because artists are having less and less control over their work because their work belongs to the publisher, and this whole business about fair use is major atrocity, to artists themselves, and yet people think they're supporting an artist when they're actually supporting the artist getting ripped off in a lot of cases.
Okay, whoa, I'm going to stop it right here. First of all, you guys gave a lot of great stuff out of these, quote, standard questions. Second, I don't want to dissuade anybody from their calling. If they believe, if they are an artist, if that's what they are, I don't want to scare them at all, okay? So let's do that now. Let's start talking about what it takes or what you guys can share with people who have the desire, who have the need to create. What can we share with them right now? And first, I want to discuss what I've heard from you, Meme, already, and that is talent versus hard work. Now, Stank and I say you guys are just ultra talented, right? We can't draw stick people. And then, Meme, and you told me that, you know what, there's a lot of hard work that goes into that as well. So, what is it? Is it both? Are you just naturally this talented? What is it, both of you?
Well, it's kind of hard for me to put a finger on. Like I said, I just kind of do what I do.
But it is a synthesis, wouldn't you agree? There's a balance between craft and academic understanding versus heart and talent.
Oh, it's definitely, because you can't just sit down and design. Say you want to design a logo, you can't just sit down and slap something out. You kind of have to know how different elements are going to play together and how different colors are going to interact, and that's something that takes talent, but also takes work, experience, and it's not easy to just do that stuff. Some people can. There's certain things that I'm not very good at, that like picking up a pencil and drawing something anymore. It's something very hard for me. So I guess I would say that there's a definite blend there.
Yeah, see, I think in my case, what I try to do is, rather than try to tell something that would take so much time, I point out to people, if you're good at what you do, and you've been doing what you do for a great deal of time, and it took a significant amount of scholarship and a great deal of training and experience to get to where you are, and then you recognize how much specialization there is, like in IT, for instance,
mm-hmm.
then by the same token, make the assumption that something else, such as art or design, is equally stratified and equally complex.
And that's definitely true. And
yeah, because I've met coders who are incredulous, that there are books on things that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I tell people, any field is, significantly complex in that there's lots of people doing it and there's lots of specialization, and you can't make assumptions, because the biggest problem I've had is this schism that exists between people who are tech literate, on the graphics aspect, in the sense of knowing, graphics software, but not being art literate in the sense of knowing the proper nomenclature or understanding production and how the what we do interrelates with all the other processes and the other disciplines.
That's a good point, and in the case of print, that's a very good thing to bring
up.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like this. Nobody would dare think, we have enough education left still that the average person knows there's a difference between owning a typewriter and using a word processor versus being a writer. In other words, we openly enforce rules of grammar. We openly, I'll put it this way, it's pretty much sanctioned throughout society that a person who knows how to spell, who knows grammar, who knows the language, who knows, construction and composition, is a better writer than a person who just goes out and buys a typewriter.
Right. So just because you have Photoshop doesn't mean you're an artist. Is that what you're saying?
And I feel like, I piss people off telling people that. But it's like if I hang out a shingle tomorrow and say, I'm a Java programmer, just because I go out and buy a programmer's utility, that doesn't make me an expert.
Because the first person that calls you to do a job for them is going to know whether you know your stuff or not.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing is, I think, a lot of people are very cynical about such things as academic affiliations and things like that.
And that's a good point, because I get a lot of potential clients saying, well, why should I pay you X amount of dollars when I can go out and buy Front Page and do this myself?
Well, see, they're marketing victims. And
that's one thing I point out to them. It's like, well, you could do that, but this is what you're going to get.
Well, the problem is we don't have art education in this country.
Well, no.
I mean,
no, we
you go anywhere and you have a misspelled word. I've never seen people so zealous about finding a typo in my entire life. And yet, how many people would be equally zealous about pointing out bad typography or bad colors or bad composition?
Right. No, you're absolutely right.
There's no art education in this country. It's like this. You don't second-guess your doctor or your lawyer. Why? Because you took enough biology in school to know you're not any good at it. And so you'll defer to the person who has more knowledge than you. And likewise, if you're on trial for your life, you're not going to micromanage your lawyer because your ass is on the line.
Right.
But everybody is an expert at design because they haven't had enough education to know that they don't know. Yeah, and I'm not saying that to alienate people as much as I'm saying it, that you have to respect people. If you haven't done your due diligence in the field and you haven't read about it, don't make the assumption that you have all the answers when you don't.
So it sounds like you both are advocates for formal training.
Not necessarily formal training as much as scholarship and practice. I think there's a difference.
And understanding for there's certain reasons why you do things. And there's certain things that just work and certain things that don't. And that's the kind of thing I think you get with experience. Because, like I said, I have no formal training. But I've been able to more or less self-teach my things, the things I need to know as far as the technical aspects. What do I need to do to send something out for four-color process? I mean, that's something that you need to know if you're gonna do this kind of work.
But what was the impetus for you, making that leap? Because consider this. The fact that you knew, hey, I know that I don't know, you knew you needed to do some scholarship. And I think if you've achieved any degree of accomplishment in a field, you can retrace your steps and recognize, okay, I know this is how complex or how stratified or how hierarchicalized this is, so I'm going to make the assumption that there's probably things that I don't know and I need to do my due diligence.
Exactly. And it's, as far as me, I knew that I couldn't just make a living doing websites and graphics on a computer if I was going to do something. And I knew that there were differences between web and print.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I started playing with Quark Express and figured, oh, what's CMYK? What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I did some research on it. That led me to figure out, well, how do things get printed? That led me to figure out, to learn about, the whole plate separations and whatnot. So it's, for me, it was one thing led to another. And like I wrote Duel this morning, learning how to do websites, I learned out how the internet works. And that led to learning how web servers work. And that learned to learning about networking. So all the pieces just kind of come together. The more, if you really...
Sort if you of have a desire to learn...
If you have the desire to learn, there's no... It, just one piece of the puzzle leaps to another.
Mm-hmm.
It's like stones across a pond.
Yeah, just like hacking.
Get on one stone,
yeah.
Exactly. And in a way, it is hacking. For me, it was, because I was in this little bubble on my own, and I had no formal training. I had,
you had to figure it out.
Exactly. I had a pirated copy of Photoshop and an old Mac. Here you go. Start learning. And I literally had no resources, and I just had to fend for myself. But in a way, I think that was good, because it more or less threw me out there on my own. And I didn't really have a mentor or anything, which... I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
It could be a good or a bad thing, because I can speak from some experience. I've had mentors before, and unless, I'll put it this way, there can be a great deal of psychopathology behind mentor relationships, just
yes.
Like there can be in a classroom. If you meet somebody who hates their career, who's not very happy, they're not going to be a good influence for you. They're going to be very negative.
You may not pick up on that either.
Yeah, and so the thing is I think if you have an insatiable search to learn, then it's an okay thing to self-educate. That's why I try to make a distinction between education and indoctrination. For instance, I went to school, and I can tell you that people who made A's in school did not necessarily do well when they left school because they were good at pleasing the teacher, but outside of any imposed discipline in terms of saying you have to read this or you have to do this assignment, once they got out of school, they shut their brains off.
Yeah,
that's a very good point. I've actually interviewed with art directors who said they don't want to hire someone who's fresh out of art school because they have to reteach them everything.
Yeah, but I will go so far as to say that if, because I did this one time, I remember I ran a web department at an ISP, and we needed another person, and I was going to hire someone, and the consensus in the web department was they wanted to hire this one guy who was, in my opinion, you know, mediocre, you know, in other words, he knew HTML to a point, but when you pressed him a little further, you realized he didn't have a scope of understanding, and so I ended up hiring a woman who was around 30 years old, who had owned a business, you know, once before. She designed and built furniture, and she basically already knew how to use Photoshop. She already knew how to use Quark, but she didn't know the web-specific stuff, and I considered it an easier endeavor to teach her about the web than to take a person who knew how to do HTML but who had no formalistic design background
Sure.
or understanding of business.
Sure, that makes perfect sense.
But you would not believe the pariah. It was like I had people from tech support coming into my office every day thinking I was a bitch because I told them they weren't qualified for the job. And I'm like, God damn, you know, if I tried to go into any other field and try that bullshit, I'd get laughed out of Dodge.
Okay, and I want everybody to glean something, you know, get the information out of these stories, okay? We're here to help. We're here to help your inspiration to become an artist. Now, I heard Mac. I heard Photoshop. Let's actually talk some technology here. Let's talk Windows, Mac, Linux. I use a little GIMP on the Linux. That's about it. Like a novice, I know I'm not an artist. I know that both of you are Mac users. Is this true?
Yes, but I don't discriminate.
Very good. But, technology-wise, specifically, what do you use?
Myself, I'm OS X predominantly, but I'm platform-friendly in the sense that I think when you're a Mac person, you learn automatically that you're the minority, and so you tend to be very inclusive in your outlook and that you know that not everybody's using the same apps, you know not everybody's using the same platform. Whereas when I've dealt with Wintel people, a lot of times they tend to be insensitive to Mac users to the point that I have an inferiority complex because I'm constantly having to explain to people, look, just because there's more of you doesn't mean you're better.
Right.
As the biggest right. problem I've had with Windows is that Windows has a large user base, but that does not automatically grandfather it as a viable design platform. Because very important things like color management and typography just are not center
you
points
can't, no. and
for that platform.
That's why, especially for prepress, any place you take a zip disk into with your files on it, they're going to be running Macs 9 times out of 10 because of those very functions.
And it's not just due to marketing. You know, I hate to tell people this, but you know, long before most Windows users ever got an idea to do some graphics, there was a print design industry alive and well for some years. It was very Mac dependent, and some of my first experiences using graphics was actually on large, you know, DEC systems running Genographics. So I've come from both proprietary systems as well as open systems, and the main thing is you have to be very inclusive in your technology outlook because it's about integrating disparate platforms and taking a lot of legacy material, like somebody who might have some old desktop publishing files from back in the 80s that have to be repurposed into web-friendly files, and you have to understand things like color space and, you know, and changing from CMYK, which is yellow, cyan, magenta, black, which is a printer ink approach, as opposed to transmissive light, which is RGB. You have to understand all these things. It's okay to learn as you go, but understand if you're doing it on someone else's dime, I wouldn't say it's politically incorrect, but you really should ask yourself, do I know enough to do this job before you do it? You don't want to use your clients as a guinea pig unless they're your enemies or something.
That's a very good point, and I would recommend to someone if you're just starting out and you want to, you know, maybe make a little money, on the side, don't use your clients again. That's a very good point. If you
I mean, you're hurting, not just hurting the client, you're hurting the other people there who really know what they're doing who have to keep their job,
right,
too. You
right,
know?
I would say that if you don't have clients, but you want to learn to just make some up, give yourself little projects to work on.
That's
design
a good
yourself
point.
A letterhead. Design yourself a letterhead and a business card. Ask your friends if they, you know, everyone I know knows someone in a band that needs a logo or something.
Everybody's looking for that first break, and I tell people maybe you should make your first break yourself, because you could do the least possible harm. Like if you think, well, you know, I haven't done this for money before, you don't want to, like, make your first stab out there and have it be a situation where you get in over your head. So help out your friends first, or do your own project.
Just friends, family, that's you know, RFA, DDP, they all could use, you know.
Yeah, you want your first break, RFA logo, baby.
Yeah,
okay, now.
And one thing I would say is, seriously, though, is if you work on your own stuff, there's no wrong. In other words, if you work on stuff, you get away from the politics and all that crap, and then you can concentrate on your craft, learn your tools, and then, most importantly, look at other people's work as much as you can. You know, no one's a better writer for having never read a book someone else wrote.
Yeah, no doubt.
No one's a better programmer for having not seen other people's code or studied about programming.
I love looking at code, even if I don't understand it fully. Okay, now let's get a little practical here. Let's make some recommendations. I'm going to go ahead and do the one for Linux, because the only art package I really know is the GIMP. It's free. It's open source. If you run Linux, check out the GIMP. It's also on Win32, so you can use it there. For Windows, really, I don't know. I think there are quite a few packages that you could use. Of course, Photoshop, the biggie. I've never used it. I know I've never used it, so I can't say.
Our multi-platform, unfortunately, Linux, you know, still is getting dissed a great deal, but I think we know the politics of that, because obviously most publishers, you know, are trying to hold on to market share. But I tell people, you really shouldn't discriminate based on platform. However, recognize that certain fields favor certain platforms. You know,
sure, and guess what? You know, mom or dad might have bought them this kind of computer, right? Mom and dad use a Mac, you might get a Mac, right? You've got a PC, more than likely, and maybe you want to run Linux and you want to be Windows-free. So I actually want to make pragmatic, you know, recommendation for people.
I would say use what you have available to start with.
Okay, so if you have, again, if you have Linux, you've got the GIMP. If you got Windows, you got the GIMP and Photoshop. Is that wrong or not?
No,
Is there more? How about Mac? What would you guys recommend?
Oh, definitely Photoshop if you can get it. There's a couple lower end applications. There's one. Deneba makes one called Canvas. That's kind of like a Quark, Illustrator, Photoshop.
Yeah, Deneba Canvas is one of these programs that has both vector drawing and bitmap, which a number of people will adopt because it is lower cost. I would caution you, however, though, that in the end, you're still going to need to be conversant, you know, with the format that other people are using.
You can't go into an interview with an art director and say, well, you know, what programs do you all use the GIMP? They're going to look at you cross-eyed. They're not going to know what that is. That being said, I've done a little bit of work, because I use OS X, and I've done a lot of, with the Unish programs under Rex 11, that you can run basically any open source for a program that will work in Unix or Linux. It's great. I've done a little bit with the GIMP, and like it for the fact that it is free. It's enough like Photoshop as far as layers, channels, the basic tool set that's in there, that if you have any experience with the GIMP and someone sits you down in front of Photoshop, you're going to basically know what's going on.
Okay, we got to actually wrap this up. There's, you know what, we do not have enough time for this show. Maybe I can get you guys on another time. This is just too big. It's too much fun. I'm learning a lot.
Well, we could both, you know, write some papers, perhaps.
That would be awesome. I would love that. Any articles?
I don't want anyone to think, you know, that I'm being a fascist or anything. As much as pointing out, first of all, I've done this for 20 some odd years, and I've had so many projects ruined when somebody who comes in who's trying to, you know, get into the field. And I tell people, when you make your break, be ready, but just recognize if you're doing it on someone else's enterprise, you know, be sympathetic to the fact that there are other people working on a project, and everything we do affects what other people are doing, because I think the key thing is respect. You know, whenever I come into a project, I try to know the other people who are working and how my work is going to be affecting their work. And as long as you do that, people are generally very willing to share their knowledge and explain to you what they do, because you can learn so much.
You can just and ask questions.
Absolutely.
Don't be afraid to ask questions.
Because I think too many people are so afraid of coming in somewhere and saying, I've just started doing this, or I haven't done this for long. And that's where you really get into trouble, is not admitting, you know, that you're wanting to learn.
Sure.
And when I was growing up, I had no problem saying, this is my first project, or I haven't done it this way before, and you'll learn so much more doing that than trying to social engineer. I mean, nothing against social engineering. I do it myself, but there's a lot to be said for going somewhere and having someone teach you something, because I'm learning something new every day.
Yeah, no doubt. We try to impress that upon everybody that, hey, don't be scared about saying stupid things. You know, don't feel like you're stupid because you don't know. Just say, hey, man, I don't know, and ask about it.
And the other thing, too, with the technology aspect, the technology changes almost daily.
Yes.
And what you know today is going to be obsolete 6 months from now.
Yeah. And if you're like me, you have artificially induced memory loss, and you can't remember everything you learn anyways. Really.
Life is never changed. I tell people this. You know, that's true that the software will constantly be changing. But at the end of the day, what they're really going to care more about is the quality of your ideas, your thinking processes, and how good your work is.
Remember that and visit the HackerArt galleries at oldschoolfreak.com.